you hear us well now?
Yes, is this Richard Chamber again?
Oh, this is Ray Palmer. I'll give Richard back to you.
All right, thanks very much, Ray.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hello?
Yes, we're having a little difficulty with this line. One of our guests here made the suggestion, I think he's being a little facetious, but I was wondering what you thought about it. That maybe the Darrows are trying to break the connection.
That's quite possible.
Do you really mean that, sir?
I say it's quite possible.
You honestly believe that?
Oh, yes.
I see. Mr. Shaver, I have with me tonight Ellery Lanier, who has been very interested in the Shaver mysteries, and I also have with me tonight Bob Mantler and Ben Isquith. In about an hour from now, we're going to have Dominique Lucchesi and Augie Roberts. Augie Roberts and Dominique Lucchesi do a considerable amount of work for Ray Palmer, and they're going to be here with us, but they won't be here in time to talk to you on the phone. But at this point, I'm going to turn the phone over to Ellery Lanier, and I want him to talk with you for a little while, and I would appreciate it very much, Richard, if you'll keep close to the phone and speak up, project a little bit, because our listeners in 27 states are very interested in hearing every word you have to say about the famous Shaver mysteries. All right, sir? Just a moment, please.
Hello, Richard. I wanted to ask you something. As I recall, one of your first modes of communication with these beings who live underground was through a sound produced by the flame on your welding torch. Do I remember that correctly?
Yes, it was. I attributed my sensitivity to the field in the welding gun I was using.
I see. How did this come over? Was it a sound that you could hear with your ears when the flame of the torch was in operation?
See, it's a magnetic gun with a powerful solenoid.
Yes.
When you press the trigger, I noticed when I press the trigger, I could hear voices, many
yes.
in the distance.
Yes.
And that sensitivity increased day by day. I figured that the strong field was stripping the insulation from the nerves of my head.
I see.
Because I held it right close to my head. And that's the way I think I became sensitive when it first began, at that place.
Well, did that happen whenever you had the welding torch in operation and the flame was working?
At that time.
Was it possible for anyone else to hear a sound from the flame of your torch?
I never tried.
You never really knew if someone else heard that then?
No, I didn't.
Uh-huh. Well, I wanted to ask you several other things about the Darrows. As you have said to John shortly, there are some that are good and some that are bad.
That's right.
So I was going to ask you whether they were basically nasty. But according to what you say, they're equally good and bad.
Well, yes, there is an inverted personality, rather common down there, and it's an old cult, the demonist cult.
Yes.
They raise them that way.
I see.
The children.
Do you have any idea of what the population quantity or the number of the population of the Darrows is at the present time?
It's not very many, something like 100,000 is the way I get it.
About 100,000. And these underground sort of caverns or layer on layer that you described that are inhabited by the Darrows, are they concentrated in any particular areas under the earth?
Well, there is a pattern to them, but it's too complicated to go into. They're practically worldwide.
Do they go under the oceans?
Some of them do. There are passages under the ocean, yes.
I was very concerned about one thing I wanted to ask you, whether there are any caverns located under the city of New York.
As far as I know, there are. Wherever the rock is old and solid,
yes,
you'll find them.
Well, we have some very solid granite rock under the island of Manhattan that has made it possible for these huge buildings to be built.
I should say that we're about 200 watts rays listening to you right now.
I beg pardon?
I should say that we're about 200 watts rays listening to you right now.
Yes. Oh, you mean the ones that are right in this area?
That's right.
Uh-huh. Well, do they ever, to your knowledge, come through under a place like Grand Central Station, for example, in these very deep underground passageways?
Yes, they have connections with the surface.
But they're
very secret. It's just a very secret group, very exclusive group.
Yes. Do you know whether they ever come out into the subway tunnels of the city?
I think so.
You do? Has that happened recently, do you know?
All the time.
All the time?
They have to have a source of supply.
I don't follow you on that.
They must buy food.
Oh, you mean they come up into the city to buy food?
That's right.
I see. Do you mean they don't produce any of their food down below? I didn't know that.
Oh, they do produce a little in hydroponics, but not enough.
I see. I wanted to ask you where their largest concentration was. Is it here and under the United States? Are they the greatest amount of them, or are they equally spread?
Well, they're pretty thinly spread. They keep a watch over every important center, mainly to ward off any threat. They're dominant.
Let's see. You say that there were approximately 100,000 of them at the present time.
That's right.
Would be under New York City, for example, would be a very small portion, a very small part of that 100,000. In other words, we just have a local group here. We wouldn't have a large concentration here then.
Well, you'd be surprised.
Oh, can't you tell us about that, or is this a secret?
Well, there's no one man to know too much about it. It's a very complicated and endeavorous thing.
Yes?
You can know a little, but you can't know very much.
I want to ask you, are there any of them under Washington, D.C.?
Oh, yes.
And do they have to come up into the city and to Washington, D.C. to get food supplies, too?
I wouldn't know.
You don't know about that, I see.
I would say it was only in the port.
Can you tell me, Richard, about the heat underground? Are they used to the high temperatures down below? Pardon?
There's very little high temperature.
Oh, well, there's very little high temperature?
It runs between 50 and 60.
That doesn't sound too bad.
Oh, it's quite pleasant.
And then I wanted to ask you about children. Do they have children there now?
Well, very few.
Very few.
Children are brown, Don.
Just a moment, Richard.
Hello, Richard.
Hello.
This is Long John again.
Yes.
Some time ago, Richard Shaver, and if I may take just a moment to tell our listeners in case they've joined us, we're talking with Richard Shaver of the famous Shaver Mysteries and with Ray Palmer. Ray Palmer is editor and publisher of Flying Saucers from Other Worlds and Search magazine. And we're talking to these two gentlemen. They're out in Amherst, Wisconsin. We're here in the studios of WOR in New York City. And we're trying to get more information this morning. This is the only way that we can get in touch with Richard Shaver. It's the first time that he has been heard over any radio station. So this is really a first in radio. And if you've listened and you've heard us talk about the famous Shaver Mysteries, we're talking to the man who claims that he knows more about it, and he certainly should. Whether you buy it or not, I do not know, but we're talking to the man now. Richard, some time ago, I spoke to somebody on the party line on this program, and they told us that there are three elevators, one someplace in Midtown Manhattan, another one in Providence, Rhode Island, and one in Chicago, Illinois. They told us that these elevators are automatic elevators located in apartment house buildings. The tenants of these buildings are not aware of the unusual ability of one of the elevators. Now, let me try to describe it to you, sir.
I understand.
Well, you do know. Well, I'd like to just tell our listeners who may have joined us for the first time. We are told that when you go into the lobby of these buildings, that you press the button, and when the car arrives on the lobby floor, if you go into the car, car alone, and you press the B button, which is door basement. The car goes down to the basement, and the both doors open up, and you find the furnace room, washing machines, or whatever equipment may be in that basement. If you press the B button two additional times, both doors close, and the elevator continues to go down into a shaft. In one community, and I think it's in the city of Chicago, the elevator, the car itself, goes over to the left of the shaft to a different shaft and continues down into the cavern where the Darrows are. Is this true, sir?
I would say it was.
You would say it was.
That's right.
When you make that statement, sir, you're not quite sure, though.
Well, I wouldn't be exactly sure of the exact details, but I know that such is the case.
Well, I see. Would this be dangerous for anybody?
You would not come back up.
The people would not come back up?
That's right.
Why is that, sir?
Secrecy.
I see. Have you ever been in the cabin?
Yes.
How is it that you're back up there?
That's an accident.
That's an accident. Well, Mr. Shaver, let me talk with Ray Palmer again for a couple of minutes, if you will, please.
Hello.
Hello, Ray?
Yes.
Yes. Ray, some time ago, we had a young man on the program just about a year ago, a young man who writes science fiction.
Yes.
And he made the statement that he met you at a convention, a science fiction writers' convention a few years back.
That is correct.
And you know who I'm referring to?
Yes, I do.
Harlan Ellison.
That's right.
He made the statement on the program here that you told him that the Shaver Mysteries were all fiction and that you published them just to create good circulation for Amazing Stories.
Well, I think now that demands an explanation, which I think I can give you.
Well, will you try, please?
When I went to that convention, I was very sick.
Mm-hmm.
I was invited to the convention and made the trip in spite of being ill. Now, when I got there, I expected to receive a courteous reception. And instead, I met with a group which I believe was closely linked with Mr. Ellison, who had apparently decided that they were going to badger me.
I see.
Now, they kept asking questions which, actually, you can't answer without... it's a sort of a question that do you still beat your wife?
Mm-hmm, I understand.
So in exasperation, finally, when he confronted me in this elevator, I said, well, what do you want me to answer to the question? And he said, the truth. I said, well, I've told you the truth, and you haven't accepted it, so my only alternative is to tell you what you want to hear, that this is entirely fiction, and that it was done for the purpose of raising circulation. Now, this was done in what you might say was anger. It was done also as sarcasm. And it was done to rid myself of this group which intended to follow me the whole convention and apparently were having a great deal of fun out of badgering me. They had no intentions of giving me a chance to have a fair say on the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That is the actual conditions in my statements to Mr. Ellison. I've had several run-ins with Mr. Ellison since, and one of them came about as a result of his appearance on your program, and I did at that time tell him that my statements to him in that elevator were in the vein that which I just described to you.
I see.
I think you could easily understand it. I don't believe that it is necessary to give an honest answer to a person who doesn't give you the courtesy.
I see.
Of the chance to give you an honest answer.
Actually, I don't think that anybody would be against an editor trying to increase the circulation of a magazine.
Well, I want to clarify that, too.
Yes.
I wasn't hired by Ziff Davis to get a lot of return. I was hired to sell magazines. And I realized from the very beginning that the Shaver Mystery was a thing that would sell magazines. We had a circulation of around 50,000 when I took this thing over. And it was 135,000 when I got hold of the Shaver Mystery. And overnight, we raised it 50,000 to 185,000, which is a sensational figure for a fiction magazine of that type.
Ray, was that accomplished in just 1 month? In other words, we'll say...
That was accomplished in 1 month, the March 1945 issue of Amazing Story.
March 45.
That's right.
Well, the circulation at that time was about 50,000?
Oh, the circulation at that time was 135,000.
Oh, then, in other words, the month prior to that...
Yes.
It was around 50,000.
That's right.
So in 1 month, you jumped that amount of circulation.
And when I took it over in 38, it was 50,000.
I see.
And in 1945, it was 135,000.
Mm-hmm.
And in March, when we ran that first issue, it jumped to 185,000 and stayed there for 4 years.
Did you present the Shaver Mysteries as being true stories?
Yes, I did.
Did you believe it at the time?
I did, yes.
Do you still believe that they're true stories?
I know it now.
You know it now?
Yes, I know it.
That's an interesting comment coming from you, Ray Palmer.
Yes, it is.
A very interesting comment.
That I could not make out of deference to my employers while I was working for them.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could give us a couple of reasons why you believe so firmly now that the Shaver Mysteries are based on the fact, not fiction.
Well, I can start out with the initial reason. I visited Mr. Shaver in Pennsylvania. I wanted to hear his voice, and I did.
When was this, sir?
This was in
before the 50s.
Well, yes, it was about 46, early
about,
46.
About, now, I would like to take this step by step, right? You tell me now that you visited Richard Shaver in Pennsylvania and you heard the voices?
That's right.
Where did this happen? I don't mean what town, but was this inside or outside Mr. Shaver's home?
This was inside his home.
What part of his home?
It was in a bedroom on the upper floor where I was placed to sleep.
You were a guest of Mr. Shaver?
That's right.
And was Mr. Shaver in the room during the time you heard the voice?
He was in the adjoining bedroom, and he was fast asleep.
Was this during the night or the day hours?
It was during the night. It was about 2:30 in the morning.
I wonder if you could describe this to us. What actually happened, Ray Palmer?
Yes, I can. I went up to this bedroom and got into bed. Now, in order to reach this bedroom, you have to pass through Mr. Shaver's bedroom. There is no way out of that bedroom except through Mr. Shaver's bedroom.
Yes.
So once in there, I was in for good. Well, Mr. Shaver went to bed immediately and apparently went to sleep the minute he hit the pillow. Now, Mrs. Shaver remained downstairs, I think feeding chickens or doing something. Anyway, cleaning up. We've been having coffee. And she was down there for around an hour before she came up.
Yes.
Now, almost immediately after Mr. Shaver went to sleep, I began hearing voices. There were four or five voices. And they all...
Ray Palmer, were they all different voices?
They were all different voices.
Male or female voices?
There were male and female.
I see. Continue,
please.
There
was a male voice, a very deep, rough voice.
Yes.
There was a female voice, I'd say a sort of youngish woman.
Yes.
There was a child's voice, which you might say 4 or 5 years old.
Yes.
And there was another man's voice. So the subject of their conversation was very interesting because they were describing an event that had taken place that afternoon at 4 o'clock around 4 miles away, that is in a downward direction.
4 miles away from Shaver's home in Pennsylvania?
4 miles away and 4 miles down.
What do you mean by 4 miles? What do you mean by 4 miles away and 4 miles down?
Well, 4 miles horizontally and 4 miles vertically.
4 miles vertically?
That's right. In other words, 4 miles below the surface of the Earth.
Something happened that afternoon
yes.
at 4 o'clock?
That's right.
Can you tell us what they claim?
A woman was torn in 4 quarters.
A woman was torn in 4 quarters.
That is right. These people who were discussing it felt that this was a terrible thing and should not happen. But they felt they're helpless about it. There's nothing they could do about it.
And, who were they? Pardon me a moment, Mr. Palmer.
Yes?
Were these voices that you heard, are these supposed to be Darrows?
They were supposed to be Carols.
Carols?
That's right, the good people.
The good people are Carols and the bad people are Darrows.
That's right.
Now, the Darrows, this is during the early hours of the morning.
That's
when
right.
They talked to you in Richard Shaver's room. Well, you were a guest. They told you
they
that...
They were discussing it among themselves, and I overheard.
Well, they were not talking to you.
No.
Well, where were they at the time that you heard these voices?
I had no idea of their location, except that I heard the voices in Mr. Shaver's room.
And they did not know that you were listening?
Yes, they did, because I interjected myself into the conversation.
And what did you say to them?
I said, what is this all about? I would like an explanation.
And why would they want to explain this to you?
Well, they didn't want to. The voice of the child, apparently, the 4-year-old child, said, pay no attention to him. He's a dope.
A 4-year-old child made this statement.
His voice sounded to be a 4-year-old child.
But it's obvious that it must have been an older person.
Well, no, I don't think so.
Do you think a 4-year-old child would use that language or even know what the word meant in the manner in which it's being used or was being used?
I think that this child knew.
Do you think that the Carrows and the Darrows
but
are superior?
I'm not saying that she was 4 years old.
Yes.
She might have been 5. She might have been 6.
I see.
It seems to me from the tenor of the voice that was very similar to the voice of a 4-year-old child.
Well, Mr. Palmer, after you, in other words, now that you had this experience, you heard these voices, they told you something that happened 4 miles away from Shaver's home and 4 miles down.
Yes.
Have you ever checked this to find out if this did happen?
Well, I haven't. I haven't any facilities for digging that deep, and I didn't know in what direction, of course, but I don't know how you would check it. I asked them if it was true, and they said yes.
Well, now, I certainly don't want to discredit Mr. Shaver. I've never had the pleasure of meeting him personally. I've never had the pleasure of meeting you, but we are on the air now. And I'm interviewing you, and I know that our listeners automatically would want me to ask this question, so I'm forced to do it, sir.
Yes.
Is it possible that Mr. Shaver was perpetrating a hoax on you?
I was perfectly aware of the fact that he might be. That is one of the reasons I came.
You mean you went to his home in Pennsylvania?
Yes. Well, I think that I rather insulted my host by what I did while I was there. Because
what did
I
you do, sir?
Play thoroughly for hidden microphones and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I found absolutely nothing. Now, I considered that Mr. Shaver might have been doing this himself, except I doubt that one man can imitate 4 voices simultaneously.
I doubt that, too.
I'm sure it's impossible.
Mr. Palmer... You're not familiar with the way we handle these interviews up here, but I'm sitting at a table, and I have a group of people sitting around. They all have headsets on, and they're listening to both sides of the conversation. In other words, my guests up here are hearing just what our listeners in 27 states are hearing this morning.
Yes,
now,
I have
Ben Iskowitz with me, and Bob Mantler and Ellery Lanier. And Ellery,
would like to be able to talk with you for a few minutes.
I'd be very happy to talk with you.
All right, just one moment. And let me remind our listeners that this is WOR Radio, your station in New York, 710 on the dial. We're talking with Mr. Ray Palmer. Ray Palmer is the editor and publisher of Flying Saucers from Other Worlds. He is also publisher of Search Magazine. He is the former editor of Amazing Stories. And he has with him in Amherst, Wisconsin this morning, Richard Shaver is the author of the famous Shaver Mysteries. And we want to get as much information as possible. I can readily appreciate the fact that possibly some of our listeners may be a little confused at this time because the quality of this broadcast certainly is not top this morning, but we've had a little difficulty as far as our connection is concerned. But we hope that you'll bear with us and listen because I think that this will be extremely interesting to all of our listeners, and I can assure you that this is the very first time that anybody has ever had the opportunity of interviewing Richard Shaver on radio or television. This is the first time, and we're very grateful to Ray Palmer, who made this possible. I'm going to have Ellery Lanier talk to you now, Ray. Just a moment, please.
Hello, Ray Palmer.
Yes, hello.
Good to talk to you. I look forward to meeting you sometime. Ray? I have something rather serious to ask you about the Shaver mystery. And this concerns a novel by Lord Bulwer Lytton.
Yes?
Called The Coming Race, which was written somewhat about a little more than half a century ago, in which there is a description of a miner who went down into a very deep shaft and came across some huge caverns and canyons and found civilizations of people who had been living there since a flood that preceded the biblical flood.
Yes.
And the rumors that I have heard concerning this the Shaver mystery were that Mr. Shaver practically lifted the story out of Bulwer Lytton's novel The Coming Race. Do you have any way of repudiating such a rumor?
Well, I can't repudiate it except to say that I don't think he did. Now, if these caverns do exist, and other people through the centuries have had the same experiences as Mr. Shaver, it is conceivable that Mr. Bulwer Lytton, or from whomever he got the story, might have had a similar experience.
Yes.
The existence of these stories doesn't mean that Richard lifted them, because I can point to dozens of other books on the very same subject. There's the book called Etterdorfa, if you remember.
Yes.
Well, he could have lifted it from that.
Yes.
There's the book called Owasti. He could have lifted it from that.
Yes.
Now, you can go on. You can list the thousands of instances of ancient legends, the legends of the caverns of hell and so on, all of which you could say were something that Richard lifted this from. You can go on. You can list the thousands of instances of ancient legends, the legends of the caverns of hell and so on, all of which you could say were something that Richard lifted this from.
Yes.
But to my mind, all of these things which we dug up later and continually are digging up today are what I see a corroboration of his story rather than indications that he lifted it in any specific book.
Well, that makes sense. I follow you there, Ray. I wanted to ask you I can't recall at the moment what was the name of the energy that was used by the Daros. Can you refresh my memory on that?
Well, there are several energies. Maybe Richard himself can tell you more about the energies.
Yes.
Do you want to talk to him about this? He seems anxious to tell you.
Surely.
Their main name for the energies they used was Ulegra. I suspect that our word electric came from that word, Ulegra.
How would I spell that?
U-L-E-G-R-A.
Allegra. And you say that was something similar to electricity?
Well, they used a magnetic flow that is not like our electric.
Yes.
It's more similar to the electric generated by the body cells.
Oh, you mean sort of a living organic electricity?
That's right. And almost all their machinery was operated with some variation of that current because it is not healthy to use anything else.
Richard, there is something I think you can enlighten me about. Within the confines of propriety, if you understand what I mean by that, I recall in one account of the life underground, there was a means by which a human being could be dipped into a large glass tank of a certain kind of fluid, which had certain vibrations running through this fluid. And this was used occasionally to test a couple who were contemplating marriage to see whether their vibrations were simultaneous. Is the same type of energy you were referring to? Is that the Allegra energy?
Well, that particular incident was largely invention. I don't know too much about it. You must remember, I've had an awful flood of information run through my head, and I couldn't retain all of it. And some pictures like that were very clear in my mind, but I didn't really understand what they meant.
It's
very hard to follow Elder thought because it's much superior to ours.
I see. Richard, can you tell the listeners what type of weapons the Deros use?
Type of weapon?
Yes, I don't recall. Do they have any specific type of weapon that they used in attacking, well, let's say, when there was a struggle between the good and the bad Deros?
Well, their main weapon is a superimposition of a destructive energy upon their common conductive ray. We'll call the Bennett ray.
Do they use a mechanical device for that?
Oh, yes.
Would it be something like a gun?
It looks like a big bed spring, as you must know.
It looks like a big bed spring?
That's right.
Does that use the Allegra force as well?
No weapon uses the Allegra. Allegra is beneficial.
I see. I'm trying to keep this straight. I don't want to get this material from you.
All their work was immensely complex compared to our electric, and they knew so much more about it. It's very hard to tell you in a short word. It would take you weeks, to go over it.
Another question, Richard. Is there any way in which we can know whether they are digging any or creating any further caverns underground at the present time?
They're very busy stripping them.
I don't understand. Can you explain that?
Taking out.
They are busy
stripping and selling them.
They are removing the caverns.
Removing the interiors.
You mean they are deserting the interiors?
Yes, they are taking them out, stripping them out of space.
I see. I didn't follow that. In other words, the Deros are in effect deserting the underground places where they have been living in.
Well, it's an ancient trade. It's been going on for 1,000 years.
Yes.
Space is looting Earth. We don't know it. It's the whole scheme of it.
Richard, I want to ask you this. Our scientists today in research and in the development of atomic weapons and in spacecraft are making some very important discoveries, and assuming that your account is accurate, it is true, assuming that it is true, would any of the discoveries that our scientists are making today in any way be a threat to the Deros, or are they more powerful than we are?
I don't think we could make anything that would threaten them, no. They're not particularly worried.
In other words, we can go right ahead with our development, and they won't try to stop us or interfere with what we are about?
They think that they can handle us, yes.
Uh-huh. What about about this kidnapping business that I recall. Have they been kidnapping any American citizens recently?
Well, I don't have specific knowledge. I only know that there are a lot of us down there as slaves, but I don't know how long they've been there.
Do you have any idea about how many people are down there as slaves?
No, I wouldn't know that.
But you said there are a lot.
Well, in every scene you see, the whole background is slaves doing something.
Well, the slaves, then, would they be half of the population down below?
More than that.
More than that? Is that true?
I would say about 10 to 1.
Really? How do they replenish them? Do they keep kidnapping people all the time?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, I understand that in the ancient times, slaves would produce children and offspring, which the owners would have as future slaves. And is it possible that the Daros are doing that sort of thing with American citizens?
Well, I think the FBI sends them a few now and then.
Would you repeat that, Richard? I didn't quite get that.
I mean, when the FBI tries to investigate them, the agents disappear.
You mean there are FBI agents that have been kidnapped and taken underground?
But they wouldn't.
How can that be possible?
Let's not go into that too far.
All right. Can I talk to Ray Palmer a moment, Richard?
Yes.
Ray?
Hello, Ray.
Yes.
This is Long John again.
Yes.
Ray, we don't want to get away from the Shaver mysteries, but I want to take just a moment to ask you about a couple of things as far as flying saucers are concerned.
All right.
Ray, in your magazine, Flying Saucers from Other Worlds, you have, in the May edition, you have the Kenneth Arnold out-of-print book, The Coming of the Saucers, and you have a number of other interesting articles.
Yes.
However, you don't have, in the current edition, anything about Buck Nelson, but there is an ad about Buck Nelson's brochure that he's selling. I would like to ask you this question, Ray Palmer.
Yes.
Do you think that the Buck Nelson story is a true story?
I haven't the slightest idea.
You know nothing about that story.
I feel that the man was dealt unjustly with by the aid people in his state.
Yes.
And I ran his ad simply because I thought perhaps if he could sell a few books, he might earn a living.
Yes. Well, I was just wondering if you had any opinions on him. I was wondering if you have any opinions at all, Ray Palmer, on any of the so-called contact stories, like the Adamski, the Howard Menger stories.
I have some very definite opinions.
Would you care to give us those opinions?
Yes, I think I can.
On what particular ones? So let's say Adamski.
First, basically, I would say that most of the personal sighting and contact stories are either fiction or they are misinterpretations.
Fiction or misinterpretation?
I think a great many of them would properly come under the heading of psychic manifestation. Take Elvio Angelucci, for instance.
Yes.
He makes no claim that this thing is literally, physically a true thing. He admits that it all happened to him while he was unconscious for a week.
Yes.
And all of the things that happened to him, he says, are of a psychic nature.
Right.
He's being at least honest in that respect.
I agree.
His adventures are very similar to Richard's in that he saw these people and heard the voices and went through certain experiences which were very hard for him to determine in relation to reality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Shaver's theory would explain what happened to Orfeo Angelucci. The very basis of psychic phenomena, according to Richard, is the cavern people's clever way of covering up some of the things that we inescapably observe.
I see.
Would otherwise give away their existence. But if we call it a ghost, naturally we're going to dismiss it. Nobody's going to dig a hole 4 miles deep in the earth to find a ghost.
Right.
All right, well, that takes care of Mr. Angelucci.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a statement here, which I think will raise quite a fuss among the science fiction fans and the flying saucer fans and the psychic fans, and particularly among the followers of George Adamski.
Yes.
I don't mean to say that George Adamski is a liar.
Right.
I respect the man. I think that what he says in his book has a very good human message, and certainly the world would be a better place to live in if people lived the way his delusions say we should. But here is a fact about Mr. Adamski which isn't generally known and which I haven't publicized to a great extent for the simple reason that I don't believe it would do any good to really attack him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not attacking him in the sense that I want to do him any harm.
Right.
But when I was the editor of Amazing Stories back in about 1939 or 40, somewhere in there, I'm very vague as to the date, but it was much before the flying saucer, I received a manuscript from George Adamski. He thought ought to be published in Amazing Stories. Well, I read it. It was the story of a spaceship which came to Earth, and the pilot of the spaceship was Jesus Christ. And the message was, of course, a message of peace and goodwill and how we Earth people ought to get along.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I disagreed with Mr. Adamski that it should be run in a science fiction magazine, and I told him so, and I regretfully rejected the manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
He said I enjoyed reading it personally and so on.
I agree with you. I can
now, Mr. Adamski's first book is that same manuscript. The only changes that were made is that from a spaceship to a flying saucer and from Jesus Christ to a Venusian.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know this is a startling statement, and
I
don't know whether Adamski will deny it or not. But that is the fact.
Well, this certainly is a startling statement, and I agree with you. It's certainly something that would be best to remain unpublished, a thing like that. It's a rather unfortunate thing.
Yes,
I wonder if we could get away from Adamski and...
Some of your listeners there are going to meet me to say, well, Ray Pomper, you're not very honest because you published a book by Williamson who claims to have been present.
Yes, well, I think what... just one moment. I want to take care of a station break. Just one moment, please. Program quite often. Would like to talk with you for a couple of minutes about the Shaver Mysteries.
Yes.
Just one moment, please.
Paul?
How do you do?
How are you, sir?
I'm very fine. How are you?
Well, listening to the details that you mentioned tonight have brought up a great many questions I wanted to ask you. Now, I take it you've known from Richard Shaver about the existence of Darrows and Tarot for approximately 15 years.
Well, since 1944.
And the Darrows are the ones who want to do us harm, and the Tarot are the ones who are good people.
Well, the Darrows don't particularly want to do us harm. It is just one of their pastimes to bedevil us, and because of the machinery they have, they are able to do it.
Now, the Darrows are also people who they want to keep their existence not known from us, don't they?
Yes, they do.
And that you said they've recently gone into such devilish stunts as tearing a woman into quarters?
Well, this happened in 1946.
Well, the thing that immediately springs to my mind is how have they allowed you and Richard Shaver to go on communicating to the world about their existence for 15 years without doing you some harm?
Well, now here we get into an area where I'm afraid I'm going to startle you again. But they haven't.
Do you know of no reason for this?
No, I don't mean that they have let us go on.
Oh, you mean they have tried to harm you?
They have retaliated, and in very great measure.
In other words, your life and Richard Shaver's life may very well be in danger.
Well, it's hard to say that anything as unimportant as we are in their scheme of things is in danger.
Well, I mean, you've been, I think Mr. Shaver mentioned that there may be at least 200 Darrows listening to our conversation tonight. I mean, certainly the headquarters are getting the messages that you're broadcasting about their existence, which they probably wouldn't like at all.
They've actually done you and Mr. Shaver harm. Would you care to go into what kind of harm they've done to you?
Well, I can give you a specific example. Now, probably the best example I can give you is what happened to me in 1950. Now, at that time, we were prepared to publish a great many of the things that I had in my files from Richard himself, which had never been published. This is a great mass of material that still hasn't been published. I consider much of it to be very good evidence. At that time, I had an accident in which my spinal cord was crushed and I suffered paralysis from the waist down. I've since somewhat recovered from that, but you'd say that my efficiency has been reduced by 50%.
You're pretty sure that...
Now let me explain how this happened. I had been visiting Mr. Shaver that day. It was a Sunday. He drove back to Evanston, Illinois. He arrived home about 11:30 p.m. It turned out there had been a cloudburst, and my basement was flooded. Before I went to bed, I cleaned up the basement, and I had finished cleaning the basement and was standing there admiring my handiwork. My wife was sitting on the cellar steps, also admiring it. All the lights in the basement were on. When I suddenly, apparently, slipped, fell over backwards, and struck my back on the floor, and was immediately paralyzed. Now, it seemed to me that I was picked up, thrown down.
So someone actually threw you down?
I was picked up in a horizontal position, was lifted high enough so that I was within 6 inches of the ceiling, with an 8-foot ceiling.
Where you were thrown into the air?
I was lifted up and then thrown down very hard. Now, I was unable to get my arms underneath me to break my fall. My arms were held out 50 in front of me so that I could not get them under me. But I did land flat on my back in the worst possible position for me being on my back.
And you're convinced of zero, is it?
Well, no, I was not convinced of anything. I was perfectly conscious at the moment of impact. Well, a few seconds thereafter, I distinctly heard a word. Now, I can't repeat on the air because it was one of those words we can't say on the air. But it was not my wife, and it was not myself. My wife immediately rushed to the phone to get assistance. While I was down there, I had time to think about it. And I wondered about this voice that I heard, and I felt that somebody had slipped up. Let us say that somebody who was on guard should have protected me from this momentary opportunity to pick me up and throw me down.
You mean the sparrow?
And he uttered the customary exclamation in that case, an exclamation of dismay.
I see.
Well, I was certainly dismayed. As the hours passed in the hospital, I kept thinking about this. It grew more and more in my mind that this was just an accident. I had slipped and fallen, and all the other things were hallucinations.
Were hallucinations?
But several days later, my wife was talking to me in the hospital, and she said, you know, it was a funny thing, but it seemed to me as though you were picked up and thrown down very hard. Now, I had not mentioned a word to her of this. I felt that was almost certain confirmation that I had been picked up. Now, it wasn't the first time that I had experienced energies of this kind. I can remember an instance where I woke up and found myself floating in the air. And it was several minutes before I could reach the surface of the bed again.
In other words, there's a group of Zeros who are trying to get you and a group of Zeros protecting you.
That sounds rather egotistic, doesn't it? But it may well be true.
Ray, can you hold it for just a moment, please? Hello, Ray?
Yes?
Just hold it for a moment, please.
All right.
We're Shaver. They're out in Amherst, Wisconsin. This is the first time that people have had the opportunity of hearing Richard Shaver, and we're finding out as much as possible about the Darrows and the Tarrows. And I'd like to take just a moment to talk about one of our sponsors. Both of these gentlemen are out in Amherst, Wisconsin. We have found from time to time that their voices faded out a little bit, but if you'll stick with us, I think we'll have a very interesting discussion. This is the only way we can talk to these two gentlemen is by telephone. And I have with me at the studio this morning Bob Mantler, Dave Fields, Ben Isquith, and Ellery Lanier. Ellery Lanier is the fact editor of Fantastic Science Fiction. Hello, Ray.
Yes, just one moment. Ben wants to continue this conversation a little more with you.
Right.
Just one moment, please.
Palmer?
Yes.
So, before I asked you that it seems that a bunch of Daryls are actually trying to get to you.
Well,
and a bunch of Daryls are fighting them and protecting you.
It would seem so. I'd like to explain something right here which may be of interest to you and especially to Long John. Saying things like this is like inviting a bunch of psychiatrists to drop in on you and prove that you're insane. It wouldn't be difficult to do. So when I make these statements to you now, it is out of respect to Long John because I feel that he is one of the most honest reporters on the air. And when he asked me for the truth, I thought, well, maybe I ought to give it to him. These things are being told you in all sincerity, with the knowledge that I know many of your readers or listeners or many of the people concerned with this thing are going to come out of it convinced that I am actually insane.
I'm not of that opinion, but I'm certainly extremely puzzled that Mr. Shaver mentioned something before about the Daryls are shipping their equipment out into outer space by means of sources. I think the equipment he referred to in the Shaver articles were mechs. Why are they making a mass exodus of space?
Well, I don't believe that either you or Mr. Shaver interpreted that exactly correctly. I don't think the Daryls or the Terrells are making any exodus. I think they are helpless to make any such an exodus.
You mean you think they're actually bound within the regions where they live?
They are not only bound, but many of them are trying to defend themselves from losing these possessions. And that at times, very heated battles do go on.
Between who?
Between the invaders from space who are cutting this stuff away and
the invaders
who wish to retain it.
You mean the invaders know the existence of...
Yes. The Earth is known all through space as the Great Tomb. That is, it is the planet where vast civilizations existed in the future, here in the past, and where all these abandoned machinery, which are almost imperishable in nature, are still in good condition. And those that are not in good condition are extremely valuable as antiques and curios.
Are they taking any of the machinery from the surface of the Earth?
I don't think that they would consider the surface machinery of any value.
In other words, the Daryl's machinery is that much more greater.
Yes, I have my plans to agree with them, and I think of my wash machine and various other equipment.
These invaders, in other words, you say that we actually do have, the Earth has been invaded by people from outer space. Do you know where they come from?
Well, it's hard to say where they come from because...
I mean, is it in our solar system?
What?
Is it in our solar system?
I think it's not. I think it's very further than that.
From another galaxy?
Possible. I'm inclined to think, too, that it may even be from... what we may facetiously term another dimension.
A fourth dimension?
Well, not a fourth, but let us say a sort of parallel universe.
In other words, a coexisting universe.
The Shaver doesn't agree with me at all.
Oh, this future on this.
I'm only giving you a theory of mine.
I was wondering about the point that Mr. Shaver went into, that sometimes the Daryls come up to the surface and one of their reasons was to forage for food.
Yes.
Now, do these beings, which seem to be... extremely malevolent, but extremely powerful, actually need food? I mean, they can't manufacture their own, or do they need food?
Well, you must understand the picture down there. There are the powerful ones who are the rulers who enslave all the rest and who deny them all of the wonderful things which they keep to themselves.
So these are derelict Daryls.
Yes. And so the derelicts must sneak out and even forage for such things as firewood.
They go out for firewood?
Yes.
You mean in a civilization of fantastic machinery, they actually need firewood?
Well, let us compare it with the feudal lords who lived in munificence in their castles, whereas their is just outside the moat, did have to forage for roots and branches and things like that, and animal dung and so on to burn to keep warm.
I mean, 4 miles underneath the surface of the earth, you actually need firewood to keep warm?
Well, let us put it this way. If 4 miles is not a specific distance, I only mentioned that because that is the distance that was mentioned to me in this conversation I overheard.
Well, I mean, 4 miles or greater, anyway.
Well, 4 miles or less, too.
You mentioned before about your general disbelief in the contact stories, although you do believe that the earth has been invaded.
Well, I think these contact stories largely are deliberate projections which are designed to confuse the issue.
You thought they were psychic manifestations.
Well, what is a psychic manifestation?
So the thing I wanted to ask you, have you gone over and actually the point that the Shaver mystery and the voices you have heard and that Richard Shaver has heard might be psychic manifestations?
You have to decide whether the Shaver is right and the caverns exist and all these things that we see, ghosts and poltergeists and all the mysterious happenings that we call psychic phenomena, are not just the cavern people using their wonderful machines to produce these illusions.
Ray, I could go on like this for weeks, but I know that you've been up all day and you've had a rather busy day, and I think we'll have to wrap it up. I want to say thanks to you and to Richard Shaver for joining us this morning, and I sincerely hope that if you do have the opportunity of coming into New York, that you certainly know that you'll be more than welcome to sit in front of these microphones and tell us some of these interesting stories and theories that you have.
That certainly we'll do if we possibly can. I realize that on a program this type and with such a short notice, it's possible only to be sensational and to be vague and touch only a few spots. And perhaps leave everybody in more confusion than when they started.
Well, maybe sometime in the near future we'll talk to you on the phone again.
Well, we'd be happy to do this anytime you want to do it.
All right. Thank you very, very much, and extend my thanks to Richard Shaver, too.
I'll do that. Thank
you very much.
Thank you for listening to it, and for a complete list of tapes about UFOs and related subjects, also books about UFOs, write to Gray Barker, Box 2228, Clarksburg, West Virginia, 26301. Thank you very much again for listening, and good night.